We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Lynn with EdWeb, and I'll be handling the introductions today. We'll be speaking today with Roger Donlin about his experiences in Vietnam and this program that is brought to us by the Congressional Medal of Honor Foundation. Before we begin, we'd like to learn a little bit about those of you who are with us today. So we're going to conduct a quick poll. Let us know if you're a teacher and if you're attending with your class, what level are your students? Elementary, middle school, high school, college, university, or other? All right, we're seeing quite a few people at the high school level with us today, as well as elementary. And we also have a good showing in the middle school area and some people from the college area. And thanks to you who are posting over there on the side who don't fit quite into one of our categories. So it's nice always to have a nice range of people with us today. That really adds to the experience, and we encourage you to use that chat area throughout. EdWeb is honored to host these interviews with recipients of the Congressional Medal of Honor and bring them to educators and classrooms across the country so that students can learn about the qualities of courage and sacrifice and how they relate to their own lives. Today, our guest is Roger Donlin, who received a Congressional Medal of Honor for his service and actions in Vietnam. He's joined by Kathy Ehlers-Metcalf, the Vice President of Education for the Congressional Medal of Honor Foundation. And with this, I'm going to sign off and give them center stage. I'll be back at the end to wrap things up. Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn. It's good to be here today. We're broadcasting from the home of Roger and Norma Donlin. Thank you for giving us this opportunity. I want to point out to our viewers that these webinars are aimed mainly for our students and our teachers who use the character development program, or those who would like to use the character development program. And that's part of why we time them the way we do. This is a little late in the year. We have a few classrooms. I noticed on the messages that are coming in, I saw at least one summer school class is with us today. So those of you who are teachers, if you have a class with us today, if you would note that in the message board so that we can make sure that we address our questions and comments specifically toward your students. I realize that most of you are out for the summer. Congratulations on that. As a former teacher, I certainly appreciate that, and I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. So this is a rare opportunity, and Roger has a video with the Medal of Honor Foundation that's available on the website already. It's a very formal interview, and it's mainly about his action. We're going to focus today, though, on what made him the person he is that turned him into a Medal of Honor recipient. So, and the life of service he's had since. So, Roger, with that, would you tell us a little bit about your background, about your childhood, and where you got your values?
Well, I want to first of all say thank you for joining us today, and thank you for the privilege to spend some time with you. And Kathy, a special thank you to you for coming to our home. This is our home, and you say, makes me think about my home as a child. I'm number 8 out of 10 children. And that was my first schoolhouse, my first classroom, my first teachers were mother and daddy. My first classmates were my brothers and sisters. So that's the setting we find ourselves today, and I think it's very appropriate and it's kind of special.
So, it's especially important. I noticed on the comments there that we have some parents with us who are homeschooling their kids. So part of our audience is children who are being homeschooled.
Well, so, I think on that note, I would only interject is that every parent should take that seriously, that they are homeschoolers. just by the fact that you're a parent, that comes with the title. Parent has an innate responsibility to be a teacher. Maybe it should be part of the wedding vow.
That's
our society
idea.
Needs a rewind on that.
So your parents then really counted very much. They were your earliest teachers, not just as your parents, but also they actually did your schooling early on with your eight brothers and sisters, nine brothers and sisters.
I always had somebody a grade or two ahead of me I could go to get reference. Mm-hmm. Daddy was in charge of the encyclopedias. He kind of stood guard on those, gave permission to use them.
And your mom was, you told me that your mom was the person who focused for your family on the need to serve, the importance of service. How has that influenced you throughout your life?
Well, taking it back as much on life, I think that's where it all started. At home, hearing about service, and the way we heard about service was the fact that both my father and my mother's brother and other uncles served in World War I. So as we prayed our grace before and after meals, we often prayed for those who have served or have served or are serving. And when I came along, my older brothers were already in World War II. Not when I came along, but when I was old enough to realize what's going on. Mm-hmm. But the mother often reminded us, the family that prays together stays together. So on that, she took over the helm of establishing a spiritual base in all of us. Daddy gave us a work ethic, told us to be prepared to work hard in life. Don't be afraid of hard work. And when you fail or fall, and you will, get up and get on with the job. Never be ashamed of being poor. It's no shame in it. It just becomes mighty darn inconvenient at times.
Most definitely. Well, your family has set a great foundation for you. And I think we can see throughout your life all the various ways in which you've served. I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about how you got into the service, but just as background for our audience, so that you know, after high school, when Roger went into the service, he spent 32 years, right, in the Army. Well, actually in combined services, which I'll let him tell you more about. And then after retirement, went on to serve in a variety of organizations, as I understand it.
I've been blessed.
For service. And I love that you always refer to what you've done and the presentations you've given as blessings, as these opportunities. I would also point out that while we're not going to go into today very much detail about Roger's Medal of Honor action, those of you who are watching can view his interview online. His citation for that medal is online. You can see he's wearing his medal today. He also has a book, Beyond Nam Dong, that you could look at and read in great detail about that. Yours is the most detailed story of a battle that I've read. Great detail about that battle, but rather focus on the service. And you and I talked a little bit, I'm kind of jumping ahead and then we'll come back. We talked a little bit yesterday about the battles of life that we fight. And one of the things that you have encountered in the last couple of years is that you're dealing with Parkinson's. And I know we have students who deal with a lot of different things, but I am so impressed that you keep doing things. You're battling through this. You want to tell them what you told me yesterday about Parkinson's and how you deal with it?
Well, going back to Mother again, she often said and reminded us that everyone in life has a cross to bear. And just stop and think about that. In your own lives, yourself and your family and relatives, the crosses you seem to bear. Some are light and some are heavy. But Mother reminded us that God will always never give you a cross that you're not capable of carrying. One of my old sergeants who I that one time, turned it back on me when he got injured. I visited him. He says, "You told me about that cross you had to carry." He says, "I tell my troops today, God never gives you a rucksack that you can't carry, in the vernacular of a soldier." So,
well, I like
Parkinson is a, it's not painful. It's just inconvenient, as my father would probably say. As you see, some tremors are coming on right now. When I get excited or nervous, I'm excited to be with you today. So don't let these tremors, there's no earthquake occurring here in Kansas right now. It's just Parkinson showing itself.
Okay, well, we are going to go right ahead as before, and just wanted to make sure that you had the opportunity to address that. When we were talking yesterday, you mentioned to me that your dad helped set a moral compass for all of you. And we are going to take questions from our audience, both that were sent in ahead of time and that are coming in today. But I think it would be a good time for you to tell us about the compass. Would you do that?
Certainly, I'd be proud to. This is a compass I carry with me. It happens to be a compass that I was issued similar to this, identical to this, when I was a young Boy Scout. But it has an even deeper meaning because it was issued during World War I by the quartermaster, of which my father served in World War I. So when I found out that that compass was issued in World War I, it was a link to my father. My father was on his deathbed when he signed permission for me to become a Boy Scout, in essence authorizing scout leaders to become my surrogate father. Keep me on course that he set. And his course was principally set by the fact that, remember, Roger, that your word is your bond and your signature is the seal of that bond. Don't be afraid of hard work. Get with it. So with that guidance, turned me over to the Boy Scouts. And it was a natural thing when I heard with the Boy Scout oath, on my honor, I'll do my best to do my duty to God and country, to do my best to keep myself physically strong, mentally awake, and morally straight. That was just an extension of what we were being taught at home, homeschooling, to serve, to be a servant in any capacity. And as you grow, you find out what your best capacity is to be a servant as. I'm still searching. My best role as a servant. I've been blessed to find various roles in this first 85 years, 84 years, and I'm looking for more opportunities.
I like the way you said that, your first 85 years. That's very encouraging.
With modern medicine.
That's right.
My older brother's turned 90 a couple of days ago, and he's trying to catch up with our older brother at 93. So I'm trying to catch up with those guys.
Excellent. Excellent. You follow in the footsteps of John Finn, who made almost 101.
Yeah,
Medal of Honor recipient.
Yeah, he's my role model.
Well, I love that you keep going and that you keep that focus on service. Now, your dad, who you speak of so endearingly, you lost when you were only 13.
Correct.
To cancer.
That's
which,
right.
Because we didn't have nearly the treatments then that we have now. And you said he turned you over to Boy Scouts to get you through those last few years. And then as soon as you were out of high school, that's when you headed off to military. Did you try college first and then military service?
Yeah, I tried college. I went to Syracuse University, College of Forestry. My dream was to become forest ranger and land management, nursery. Land is landscaping, mm-hmm. But got a little off course on that.
With college.
And reset in azimuth and enlisted in the Air Force in the jet age. I said, oh, this is great. I'm going to learn how to fly now. Mm-hmm. So I got into the Air Force, and about that time they made a public announcement that the Air Force was going to do something that the Army did, and the Navy. They're going to have their own academy. So I applied for the Air Academy when I was in boot camp and got word that I'd been accepted. So then I went into the prep school for the Air Academy, and I thought that, oh, my life's works have been set on fly jets. Just before we were to report to the first class at the Air Academy, they redilated my eyes just to eat time up, to hold us up for another week. And they found a possible congenital cataract. Roster 19 was eliminated.
Oh.
So I had to reset my compass once more.
Mm-hmm.
So I adjusted the azimuth, set it on West Point. So I was successful in entering West Point with a lot of shenanigans, taking prep school courses.
I understand math was a bit of a...
Well, that's my Achilles heel. And it got me again. And then in the old days, West Point, if you failed, you got eliminated. But you had a chance to take a re-entrance exam. So I borrowed some money from my older brother, Paul, and we went into a math tutor, Dr. Silverman, in the Bronx in New York, boned up on math and re-entered West Point. Thinking, oh boy, I'm going to do it this time. Get in there and got impatient with the system because I, at that time, was as old as upperclassmen.
And which seemed old at the time, right? You were all of what, 23 years old?
Yes. And I did it, probably the worst decision I ever made, but I resigned, left. But it didn't last too long because that was in 57. 58, I was back in the Army.
Back in the Army.
I re-enlisted, and this time in the Army.
So the Army was in your heart.
Yes. So I guess I've always been wanting to be in uniform, just like Daddy and all my brothers, and to serve. My prayers were answered, and are still being answered.
So you had a family history of service. You mentioned your grandfather in World War One, or your father in World War One.
Well, mentioning that, this is the centennial of World War One. The armistice is being signed this year. But also, marks the first 100 years where the last four generations of Donovans have had somebody in active duty. Right now, as we speak, I have a grandnephew and a grandniece serving in the Navy.
Very good.
So, and the grandniece is only the eighth female to complete the Navy Dive and Salvage School.
Wow.
And as we speak, she's on an emergency mission in Kuwait, doing emergency work on a submarine.
Oh, my. Oh, my. That is a proud and long family history of service.
We're really proud of her.
I guess so.
Yeah. And to mark 100 years of service for the Donovan family makes me very, very proud to be part of that.
That is wonderful.
Yeah.
That is wonderful. So with that, you went into the Army then, and we were not yet, when you joined them, we were not yet involved in Vietnam, correct? Or only as an advisory position in 1958?
Right.
So you were already an officer by the time that we actually...
Well, I got commissioned in 59. 59 was about the time we were getting involved.
All right.
Actually, there's been some involvement since the end of World War II in that area, but not very indirectly.
Okay. And so I know that for a lot of people, it seems like I'm skipping the most important part, but Roger was awarded the Medal of Honor for actions in 1964 when you were approximately 30 years old, correct?
That's right.
So you were the old guy at the time, right?
No. Sergeant Pop Alamo, 45 years old. He was my senior NCO.
Wow.
World War II veteran and Korean veteran. Father of three, wife expecting four.
Gosh, there's a lifetime of service too.
That's right. He died in my arms.
Oh.
That's...
During that Medal of Honor action.
So I wear this Medal of Honor on his behalf. And John Houston, who was one of my young NCOs who died in the same battle. His wife gave premature birth to twins.
Oh, my.
When she got that word, one of the twins died. So John Houston Jr. is buried with his father in Arlington.
You made the comment in your book when you write about that, that the casualties of war go well beyond those on the battlefield.
I sure do, and that's an example. And people should remember that today. When they see men and women in uniform on the streets or on the airport, in the airport or any place, just say thank you. And the wounds of war are not always visible. Anybody in uniform today, they've been at war their whole careers, practically. We've been at war for 16, 17 years now straight. These young men and women have been going and coming. Hardship is almost unbearable. But a simple thank you from somebody on the street goes a long way. So I encourage you to do that. And encourage your students to reach out that way. I see it in my travels, Norma and I do, at the airports and on airplanes. When young men and women in uniform get on the plane, the pilot comes out, gives them special greeting, or somebody from first class will get up, offer their seat, and go back in the plane and offer that seat to somebody in service. Gestures like that show real respect and love and appreciation.
So, very important at a time when only about 1% or less than 1% of our population carries that burden of military service for all the rest of us. You pointed out to me when we sat down here today that you and Norma, one of your favorite of your pieces in this room, which is, this is very much Roger's room with many of his things that he has been given in honor of his service, pictures with his brothers and with people he served with over the years, and service coins behind me, challenge coins. But at the top of this is a comment that says that our flag does not fly because of the wind that blows beneath it, but because of the breath,
the last breath
of each soldier who died defending it. And I appreciate that you have that represented in your home, and that you and Norma spend so much time supporting our service
flag
people.
Flying right now,
and the flag is flying right outside the window. In fact, some of you might even be able to see it in the reflection. We were struggling with what to do with that reflection from the window in that coin case, but actually, you can see in that reflection a bit of the flag, both the American flag and the Special Forces flag,
regimental flag waving
in that window. Roger, you told me earlier that you and Norma have traveled to all 50 states in this country. And so I want to take just a second and recognize, you asked who was with us today. We have viewers on this webinar from North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Washington, Wisconsin, New Jersey, Texas, Ohio, Maine, Illinois, Georgia, Florida, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Oregon, Alabama, California, Louisiana, New York, Tennessee, and Arkansas that we've tracked thus far. So if we missed your state, I apologize. And I still look forward to hearing if there are any more classrooms with us. We'll recognize, give a shout out to your classrooms as well.
Greetings to all of you from the heartland, the first city of Kansas, Leavenworth.
Where this almost didn't happen because we had a phenomenal electrical storm last night. And it's beautiful today. Kansas is welcoming us. So in these many years of service and the background that you took with you, with your father's moral compass and your mother's emphasis on service, one of our viewers has asked, besides your parents, is there someone who you would say most influenced your life?
There's a couple of teachers. I go back in fifth grade and then in high school. Fifth grade was Sister Rose Regina. She was a tough taskmaster. She'd give us 50 geography questions every night.
Ooh.
And then we'd pray. We'd get to the sixth grade real quick so we didn't have so much geography. The school was reorganized over summer. Sister became the sixth grade teacher.
Oh.
So geography became part of my regular, and believe it or not, yes, she became the seventh grade teacher. So I had Sister Rose for 3 years. Well, the blessing in disguise of all of that, I got introduced to geography. I experienced my first, in fifth grade, my first academic all-night search. and I sleepless night.
Oh no,
I couldn't find Madagascar. it was horrible. But through interest and stimulated by geography, it's created a stimulation for interest in language. When I got to high school, I was able to take Latin, which was introduced first as a church for our services as acolyte. We learned Latin. But Miss Lent, Eleanor Lent, became my Latin teacher. And one thing that happened, the teachers may be aware of the Golden Key Award, which was given annually by educational associations. And I was called in 65 and said I was going to receive it. And I told them they got the wrong phone number. You better hang up. And they hung up and they called me back. And he says, no, you're it. Listen to us. This is just telephonic notification. We're going to write you. The thing is that you are going to tell us what teacher influenced you most in your life at this point. I said, easy, that's Eleanor Lent, my Latin teacher. Well, we don't want to know in case you change your mind. Well, it won't change. Well, it didn't change. And we went to Atlantic City for the national convention. And I was able to present her a golden key. And we both received one. And she received a monetary award. And fortunately, the school was reorganizing again, as schools do. Mm-hmm. The language department, the language, as she taught, Latin, French, and German.
Oh, my.
She was elevated to a language department head, which worked out beautiful. But it was a lifelong friendship. She lived to be 98. Every year I went home, I visited her, thanked her for instilling in me the interest of language, because it led me opportunities to study 6 or 7 different languages over my career, and I thank her for that. Teachers have been special in my life and always will be. So I want to say thank you to each one of you out there today.
Know that teachers appreciate that, because sometimes it feels a little thankless, and it's always good to hear a thank you from.
Well, we asked Miss Lent to be our honored guest at my 50th high school reunion.
Oh. That's wonderful.
Norma went with me and we asked her. She says, Norma, you know I can't do that, because if I did that, it would show preference. And so my policy is to never accept an invitation like this. I says, Miss Lent, if we're not leaving until you change your policy. 40 minutes went by. And finally, she looks not at me, but Norma, and says, well, Norma, under one condition, I will accept the invitation, since Roger's stated he's not going to leave. If somebody tells me who put that weasel in my desk the last day of school. So for 50 years.
You put a weasel in your favorite teacher's desk?
Well, she went through a grave thinking I did. It's one thing I didn't do.
It's one thing you didn't
but
do.
But nobody came to my defense at the reunion.
No?
And honestly, I didn't. I think it was Bob Lizette, but he's passed on.
Can't defend himself.
Yeah. But I've been known to put squirrels and snakes and rabbits and other things, and worms and little things like that. But I've never even caught a weasel.
It's probably a good thing. I think you're probably too smart to catch a weasel.
But it's been fun telling the story, sharing the story of its time.
Okay. That's a great story. I'm going to try to turn it to a little more productive direction. Since she was your language teacher and you said you learned Latin from her, did you learn any Vietnamese before you actually went overseas?
Part of our pre-deployment training was language, 2 languages, because of the 100-year influence of French.
Right.
Half of us spoke or studied French.
Okay.
And the other half of us undertook what was referred to as a working knowledge of Vietnamese.
Okay.
So, and one of my NCOs, Vernon Brown, had already served in not only Korea, but also in Vietnam. He had a little working knowledge already. My executive officer, young Lieutenant J. Olin Isaac, who's a West Pointer who had French. So we had a little base within our team, French and Vietnamese, and then the rest of us were fillers around that. So we had working knowledge. We could please and thank you and not extensive, but enough to get things going.
Mm-hmm.
And then effective use of interpreters.
Okay. In a far less important capacity, at the end of the Vietnam War, I had begun teaching English in Southern California, and we had refugee students who came in and just wandered onto campus and took any class they could. And I thought always that my French that I took in high school and college was completely useless until I ran into those refugees from Vietnam. And I spoke no Vietnamese, they spoke no English, but we were able to communicate in French.
Right.
Now, you had two different groups of Vietnamese that you were working with during your Medal of Honor action. You had the nuns and you had what you refer to as the strike force.
We had the CIDG, which were Vietnamese.
Okay.
The nuns were Chinese.
Oh, they were Chinese. Okay. So what languages did you communicate in with them?
The Chinese spoke Vietnamese as well.
Okay.
So we had Vietnamese interpreters
mm-hmm.
who did our interpreting for us with both the Chinese and the Vietnamese.
Probably something that a lot of students don't think about as being so important, but language, our ability to communicate is based in that ability to find a common language. So great emphasis for our students there on the importance of language.
Well, I'd like to put a plug on that language to the music teachers, because that is the international language,
yes.
Music. So. Salute your music teachers.
That's for sure. That is a great plug for them. I'm going to go to some questions that were sent in ahead of time and some of the ones that we've gotten today. Someone asked to really give us a direction here. What is your definition of character?
Definition of character. I've never defined it.
But you live it all the time.
Well, I tried it. And my brothers used to introduce me. This is our youngest brother. He's a real character. I don't think that was complimentary at the time.
Brothers usually aren't.
But character is that those qualities that are worthy of emulation. I look back and I think about the people of character. And I certainly already were mother and daddy.
Mm-hmm.
And then relatives, aunts and uncles, neighbors. I had neighbors who were doctors, neighbors who were highway patrolmen. But they all had character. But the character, viewing that as a youngster, character of a policeman versus a doctor, character was built and developed around formal education.
Mm-hmm.
The policeman was more disciplined. So those character traits evolved and became more evident to me as I matured and grew older.
Someone asked a very closely related question, and that was there a character lesson that became particularly important to you as you served in the Army?
Yeah, character lesson, integrity. Telling the truth. Report cards. Teachers are always familiar with report cards. Well, you've had the problem where somebody's doctored a report card. They took a letter grade and figured it around and it came out some way else.
Oops.
Well, in the military, we have report cards called readiness reports. And people are tempted at times when resources are restricted, you're expected to meet standards, you don't have enough ammunition, equipment ready to train, And people find shortcuts, but then they end up shorting themselves by not reporting it totally truthfully. Mm-hmm. And I was in charge at more than one time to oversee the rendering of these reports, and I'd have to call a spade a spade. And it was difficult but necessary to say, look at this report, it's not acceptable because it's not totally truthful. So you have to be strong enough to stand up and call a spade and let the cards fall where they may. But because allowing things to be standards to fall and not be met will cause casualties on other battlefields. And in the profession of soldiering, those are mortal battlefields. So the same lessons in life, truthfulness. When you're lying, you lose on other battlefields.
You know, your Medal of Honor action, and here I said I wasn't going to address it that much, but your Medal of Honor action actually began, that battle began with a circumstance where the troops that you thought you were working with had been seriously infiltrated by Viet Cong, and therefore about a third of the people who you thought were, who were actually within your camp and who you thought were on your side, were infiltrators and who started that battle.
That's right, and sleepers.
And talk about an example of that mortal circumstance in which you're not being able to trust those people who were with you was terrible.
It's trust, yeah. And that's a very important, and teachers are very keen on that, because as a teacher, you take on the responsibility to convey lessons, whatever they may be, to the children entrusted to you by their parents. Trust has been on the national, international news for the last 12 hours. We just had a lesson, a global lesson, between the heads of two states, the United States of America and North Korea, where they're reaching out, trying to reestablish some measure of trust so that we could possibly find ourselves living in a more peaceful period of time on this globe we call Earth. So the classroom where you're establishing trust, I'm particularly pleased and honored to be part of the character development program where trust is the cornerstone for the values that we're hoping to transfer to the next generation of service and sacrifice and commitment and patriotism and integrity amongst others. But these things complement with you as dedicated professional teachers, educators, counselors, coaches, everyone involved in training and education of our youth. So we can have no quit in us.
You mentioned to me at the earlier on today that when you find yourself stumbling or falling down or getting knocked down, that it's so important to get back up again and keep going no matter what. And in fact, you told a story about and I guess you've given speeches on this issue before, that about the one of the biggest challenges in people's lives being not various kinds of temptation, but rather discouragement.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. We talked earlier how I messed up my first ever in college and ended up going into the Air Force. Mm-hmm. The first day I was in the Air Force, they took us on an orientation run. And the old sergeant, it's the end of this run and we were exhausted heading back to our barracks. He pulls out a 3x5 card and looks at it, puts it back in his pocket, and we keep on running. And oh my gosh. And what he did, he ran us literally through the chapel because he forgot to show us where the chapel was. And in that, I looked over there and I saw a bulletin and I grabbed it, picked it up and stuffed it in my pocket. Well, that night I pulled it out and I read it. And there was an article in there called The Philosophy of Life. And it caught my eye. And it went something like this. It was a story about the night the devil decided to go out of business. So he put all his tools, implements of evil, on display. It certainly was a bad looking lot. There was malice and hatred and envy and jealousy and deceit and greed. They're all marked with a price. Apart from the rest lay the simplest tool known to man. Marked, worn more than any of the others, marked higher than any other. So someone asked the devil, "What is that? And why is it marked so high?" The devil says, "That is discouragement. And I have it marked so high because it's valuable to me. And I can use it on anyone when I can't get near him with any of the others. He's had it marked so high, he's never sold it. He still owns it. So beware of it." There's a story for all of us there. But I hasten to add, the core of that word discouragement is courage. So we can take discouragement, think about it, but think more importantly about courage. Yes, we may think of physical courage, but there's moral courage and ethical courage. It comes in many wrappings. Dig deep and have some fun playing with that one in the classroom.
That's a great piece of advice. That would make a good lesson to take that root word of courage and look what happens with the discouragement.
Yeah. And courage.
Thank you. Yes, thank you for that. We have a lot of closely related questions that have come in, and I'm going to kind of blend some of them together. A lot of questions about keys that helped you as you went through the service and through your life. But one of the things that I would like to ask you about is that you're now 85, is that right?
In a few months.
Almost. And you were only 30 when you were awarded the Medal of Honor. And while you comment in your film that is recorded for the Medal of Honor Foundation and available on themedaloofhonor.com, that being a Medal of Honor recipient is something that you never dream of. But it seems to me, having had the privilege to spend much time about Medal of Honor recipients and to have interviewed a number of you now, that the medal very much, especially for those of you who were awarded it when you were very young men and have worn it a long time, that the Medal of Honor in many ways defines your life, that it changes what would happen with your life thereafter and the opportunities that you have. Someone asked, how can our youth today stay humble, respectful, and hardworking? And I might ask, especially in light of the Medal of Honor and the light that is shown upon you when you're awarded that, how do you stay humble, stay on course, and wear that as you feel it should be worn?
Well, when it all happened and I realized it was a great honor, but it's a great responsibility. I don't see it as a burden. I see it as a responsibility. And that responsibility, I've chosen to commit myself to any way possible to do things that would always bring respect, love, and honor to the man that really made the ultimate sacrifice, and now women also. And I've committed myself to do that. When I met Norma, she was just 22 years old, already a widow, having her first husband killed in Vietnam. And I couldn't fathom, you know, I lost my men in Vietnam and I was wounded by that. I was in denial. She recognized more than I did myself. She's the one that told me that you're in denial. Your survival is guilt. But she was hurting from the loss of the love of her life. Falling in love was not easy. Because we were both hurting. And it still hurts. But the joy is that we're still in love and we're still together. We're blessed beyond all measures. Now we find ourselves, Norma has been appointed and accepted the appointment as an ambassador for Reach Across America. So we are engaged today in that program, encouraging people to remember, honor, and teach. Remember those who have served and are serving. Honor the memory of those who have served. And teach the next generation that freedom is not free. We must serve and sacrifice. And you as teachers and coaches and administrators and counselors are doing just that. You're serving and sacrificing. You're the example to the now generation and the next generation that they must be prepared, as the Boy Scout oath encourages you, be prepared. Accept responsibilities when you come of age. And if you listen to the lessons learned from your predecessors, you will be prepared. Whether it's a science or a language or an art, they're all reaching out to help you be prepared in life.
Thank you so much. One of the things that someone has asked is whether, and related to our involvement in society's individuals and our dedication and our preparedness, is has the Medal of Honor given you a different sense about democracy and the nature of voluntary service as you've watched changes in military service over the last four decades? So, Do you see changes in how we go about participating in this great experiment, as some of our patriots have called it, this experiment in democracy?
Yeah. Well, it sure is an experiment. As evidenced in the last 18 hours. But it's an experiment, and the biggest experiment that's in my time was that we went from a conscript army to all volunteer. So we've been at war for 16 years with an all volunteer armed forces. I spoke of my brothers and my father and uncles who served during previous wars where they were conscripted and drafted. I still remember very vividly this, hearing the songs from World War I, they're going over there, over there. They're going for the duration. World War II, they went over there. They were gone for the duration. One of the big changes we went to Vietnam on temporary duty. We were going to go for 6 months and then come back. I felt embarrassed. But eager to do my part, to be get in the fight, so to speak. But still embarrassed that we were just going for 6 months. But then powers to be said we're going to become an all-volunteer force. I was against that, and the jury's still out. Because we now have our national security in the hands of less than 1% of our total population is being represented. There's a lot of complicating factors. So we must remind each other, both people in armed forces and the people enjoying our way of life that are not in armed forces and being called upon to lay their life on the line, that we're all Americans. We must pull together and find ways of supporting each other.
Would you say one of the complications of our being an all-volunteer force and being such a small force at this time is, as opposed to either being in for the duration or going on to what you referred to as temporary duty in Vietnam, now we have that very small 1% going back into battle repeatedly as recurring temporary duty and numerous deployments?
Yeah, it's harder and harder. The men and women of today's Army deserve so much of our gratitude. Not just those in uniform, but the families, what the families have to go through. The children without mom or dad, and in some cases, both mom and dad are in uniform and they're going, and some other family member are standing in temporarily to help raise them. Or we even reached a low point a few decades ago, not so long ago, where foster parents were playing a role for active duty families who were dual career. This is unheard of, but sacrifice.
Sacrifice is one of the character traits that the Medal of Honor Foundation, Medal of Honor Society, has designated as the basis for the Medal of Honor Foundation's character development program. And so it's part of the basis of the lessons that we teach now for elementary as well as middle and high school. And I mentioned, make that transition, because one of the people who wrote in ahead of time, a teacher, asked at what age should character education be taught? And I think you've already answered that question, because you talked about character education being starting in the home and continuing. But I would like to point out that when we started an elementary program just a year and a half ago, we first launched it in Minnesota during the Medal of Honor Convention. Right. And at that point, there was some concern about how we would do this program in elementary schools, because these stories are based on stories of war, and we want to be very cautious with what we expose our young children to. I mean, they get quite enough on the news without us inundating them with more war stories. So you were one of two people who volunteered to go and watch a teacher teach this in an elementary school classroom. And I remember you and World War II Medal of Honor recipient Bob Maxwell.
Bob Maxwell, yeah. Our eldest surviving, 97 years old.
Yes, yes.
I was so excited about being in that environment, being in a classroom. When I found out I was going to be there with Bob, and recognizing that he was our eldest, I was beside myself. And we get into that classroom, and the teacher, I forget the proper title, but it was bilingual.
Yes, it was bilingual, and it was kindergartners.
Kindergartners.
So we had munchkins, little kids.
Yeah, and the teacher prepared them and had the values up there on the wall. And she chose one for the day, and it was during the pre-election period. And she said, well, we're going to talk about patriotism. And one way to talk about patriots, all patriots participate by voting in America. So today was a class, we're going to vote on which activity we're going to do at recess. The kids were all excited. You vote one for this activity, two for this activity, three for this activity. So it's one, two, or three, or uno, dos, tres. So I went uno, dos, tres, and the kids giggled He said, oh, that old guy can speak Spanish. And then Bob got involved. And the kids were looking at us, and I was being an old geezer, and he was looking, they were looking at him like he was a dinosaur. So it was awesome. But the teacher was so enthusiastic. And the kids, they went through the voting process, and they decided on what activity they were going to do. And I don't recall at this point what it was, but they went out and did it. But the teacher was happy, the kids were happy, and Bob and I went tickle pink about this exposure. So I tell this to some of my buddies back home in high school. Well, Roger, it seems like they finally put you in the right class. I guess you're going to kindergarten now.
Well, the thing I had the privilege of being there and observing this, and the thing that I loved about that was that you two both, I remember you saying, I want to go because I'm not convinced this program will work with young children. And you and Bob both came out of there so enthusiastic about the program. And I love that enthusiasm showed up again today when you were sharing the experience. Those children learned what it was to vote. They came back in and they talked about what it was to have the option they voted for not be the winning option.
Right.
They talked about what they could do next time to help their option win.
Right.
And they got a whole lesson on patriotism in a short 45 minutes.
A civic lesson.
Yes, a civic lesson as well.
How to organize.
And what it means to be a good citizen by the way you participate in that process. So it.
And we're reminded to thank your teacher for introducing that to them.
Yes, yes. And they also had the opportunity, the very rare opportunity, to meet two truly wonderful Medal of Honor recipients. I am very sorry to say that we are pretty much out of time for today. We need to do this again sometime.
I'd love to.
Okay. Those of you who joined us, both with and without students, thank you so much. If we didn't get to your questions, I hope we at least rolled into this an address of that. Yes, sir.
Could I just offer one final? It's a gift from Norma to me 50 years ago that I want to give to you all. It's inscribed in this wedding band. And I think it's appropriate for what you have done and what you are doing as teachers. The message simply states that what we are is God's gift to us. What we become is our gift to God. Remember, in God we trust. Thank you.
Thank you, Roger. And I'm going to hand this program back over to the people at EdWeb. Lynn, if you'll go ahead and wrap things up for us today. Thank you very much, everybody, for being with us.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. On behalf of everyone participating in this session, I want to thank you, Roger, for sharing your inspiring story with us today. And more importantly, we want to tell you how much we appreciate your bravery and your selfless service to our country. And thank you as well, Kathy, and the Congressional Medal of Honor Foundation for bringing this interview to teachers and students at no charge. EdWeb is honored to be part of these remarkable interviews. For those educators with us today who are interested in their CE certificate, we want to let you know how you're going to receive it. If you're an EdWeb member, your personalized certificate will be posted to your homepage by the end of the next business day. If you logged in with your email address, we'll email you links to a CE certificate form, the recording, and how to get added resources for today's event. You only need to take a CE quiz for your certificate. If you signed in directly by phone, if you're watching this as a group, or if you're viewing this as a recording. If you'd like more free information from the Congressional Medal of Honor Foundation, there are resources available for you for no charge at themedalofhonor.com. So we encourage you, now that we've finished today's program, to jump onto their site and find out about all those free resources, including live training events in your area. We also invite you to apply or nominate an educator for the 2018 Excellence in Character Education Award Applications are now open for this award given by the Congressional Medal of Honor Foundation to teachers who inspire their students to live by the values of courage, commitment, sacrifice, integrity, citizenship, and patriotism through their use of the Medal of Honor Character Development Program. You can learn more at the link we've provided on this slide or that is also being placed in the live chat area to the left. Applications will be accepted through this Friday, June 15th, and we hope you will apply. This webinar is part of our program on EdWeb called the Medal of Honor Character Development Program. We invite you to join that community, which is also free of charge, at www.edweb.net/CMOH. Everything in that community is no charge. We have all of the archives of past interviews. We have a place for you to have discussions amongst each other. There are CE certificate availability through some additional quizzes and all kinds of free resources for you to continue to collaborate and use the resources of the Medal of Honor Character Development Program. Thank you again to everyone who joined us today, and many thanks to Roger from all of us for your bravery and selfless service. We look forward to seeing you back here again. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.